You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Last year, Michigan tightened requirements for civil asset forfeiture. That's the law that allows the government to seize property when someone is accused of a crime, even if they're not convicted. This started as part of the war against drugs. It became a lucrative tool for cash-strapped police departments and prosecutors. Laws passed last year require more transparency in Michigan, but it does not abolish civil asset forfeiture. Also, there's been a recent appellate court ruling on this. One of the groups that's been calling for an abolishment or an end to civil asset forfeiture is the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Jarrett Skorup is a policy analyst for the Mackinac Center. Jarrett, would you explain what this is just a little more fully? What is civil asset forfeiture?
The civil forfeiture is, like you said, the ability for law enforcement to seize, and then the forfeiture is actually the transfer of the property over to the state. And the idea behind that is not necessarily a bad one. It's supposed to be you have where criminals gain possessions or gain revenue from doing something illegal. And so you need forfeiture in order to take the funds or the assets, and they use that for criminal work and then also to recompensate victims and things like that. The problem in Michigan and around the country is that this isn't just done in the criminal realm. It's done in civil realm, which is why it's called civil forfeiture, which means that when assets are seized and go through the civil system, it can happen before anybody is charged with, in many cases, even accused of a crime. So the government is able to take people's property even though they might actually not have done anything wrong.
I want to get to the Court of Appeals ruling, but first, what did the laws that were passed last year do specifically about the transparency of this law?
So right now, we know that the state takes about $20 to $25 million worth of assets every year, but we didn't know who that was coming from, whether the person was charged with a crime, what the assets were. We just didn't know a lot about it. And so law enforcement would make, when they make the case, hey, we're taking these from drug dealers and from these people who are bad people. Well, we didn't really know how much of that was coming from them versus coming from people who were never charged with a crime. And so what the laws did was they said that they're going to have to start documenting that. We're going to know at beginning next year, we're going to know who these assets came from, what actually happened with the possessions, whether somebody challenged to try to get their stuff back. And so that's what the transparency bills did.
Now, the Mackinac Center has written about people who've been subjected to this law. Can you give us an example of how this works? Somebody who might be unjustly required to try to get their own stuff back.
Yeah, I can give a specific example, and then I can talk generally about how this works. A specific, probably the most infamous example happened a couple years ago. There were a bunch of people who went to an event down in Detroit at an art museum, and this art museum was accused of serving alcohol without a license. Now, they were checking people and making sure they were of age and all that, but they didn't have the proper license for Wayne County. And so the police came, and even though people were not alleged to have done anything wrong, they were in the vicinity of illegal activity. And so the police took seized their cars from everybody involved and then charged them in order to get their assets back. So that was a pretty, what we would say is a bad example, not charging someone with a crime. They still had to pay or they lost their vehicle. And then more broadly, unfortunately, the way that forfeiture works in Michigan is sometimes while somebody is going to go through the criminal process, the law enforcement will immediately take their stuff and then begin to start the proceedings of forfeiting it over to the state, even though the person hasn't yet been convicted of a crime. And the problem is that if you want a challenge to get your stuff back, to get your assets back, you have to pay a 10% bond up front. So to even begin the process of proving that your stuff wasn't involved in wrongdoing, you have to pay sometimes a large amount of money up front. And a lot of people, they're not able to afford and the ability to do that, which is what this court case was about.
Sure. If it's a car or your house, it could be a really significant cost. Mm-hmm. So recently, the State Court of Appeals ruled parts of the civil asset forfeiture law violates due process rights of defendants. What parts and how does it change the practice?
So the U.S. Constitution has, you know, we found that people have a right to an attorney. They have a right to a proper defense. And so what this court found was that there was a woman where the state seized a couple of vehicles from her, a bunch of her cash, and her home. And so she didn't have a lot of money, and so she was only able to come up with about $1,000. And so she couldn't get all of her stuff back. So she was only able to get to even challenge to get some of it back. And eventually, at the end of the day, another court ruled that she was able, even though that she was in the right, essentially that she was found to not, the assets were not guilty of any type of crime. But in the meantime, she had lost these assets because she couldn't come up with the money to start the proceedings to get them back. So she thought that her home and her cars had nothing to do with the criminal activity that the state was talking about, but she didn't have enough money to hire an attorney or to put up the 10% bond to begin the challenge to get her products back.
I want to clarify one thing, because you keep saying the state took, but you really mean, I mean, state in a formal sense, local police, local prosecutors take and benefit from that money, correct?
Right, yep, great point. Yeah, I'm using state. So for the government, so this is done. This can be done for city. This can be done at the county level, or it can be done at the state level. Whoever is prosecuting the crime, or whoever has actually seized the assets.
Now, the federal government came up with this idea. It has since distanced itself from it, determining that civil asset forfeiture was bad policy. Yet states and local officials still are using it. I mean, for civil libertarians, the conflicts of interest, because cops and prosecutors are seizing things they're going to actually benefit from in their budgets. This conflict of interest and government overreach seemed obvious as soon as it was passed back in the 1980s. Why is it just now falling out of favor?
I think that for a long time, people didn't understand what was happening or how it was happening. And of course, a lot of times law enforcement, they just associate this with drug use. And so for a lot of people, they're thinking, well, it's drugs. That's a bad thing. So of course, they're not willing to get involved or to understand what's actually happening. From our standpoint, we're not necessarily saying, that these are always good people or that this isn't used against criminals or anything like that. But we're a civil libertarian group, and people have constitutional rights. And if the police want to take ownership of somebody's property, they should have to prove and convict them of a crime. And Michigan has the worst of a couple of different worlds here, because as the money goes back to the department that initially seized people's assets. And so you have this incentive process set up, and it's been admitted by law enforcement. This is used to pad their budgets. And that's not how a criminal justice system should work. Certainly, a lot of times we should definitely be spending more money on law enforcement when they need it, but we shouldn't set up a system where local police departments are using this type of tool where they don't have to convict someone and they can gain revenue from it.
So that brings up the question I wanted to ask. How will police departments and prosecutors make up for this loss of seized revenue if this, for instance, is abolished eventually?
Well, in some areas, they've already begun having to do so, just because local sheriffs have discretion over whether they want to allow their people to forfeit property. And there are a lot of counties and townships that just don't do it in the state of Michigan. So right now, we kind of have a two-tiered system, because we have a lot of areas where they're doing forfeiture and they're using it all the time, and they're teaming up with federal officials to do so. And then we have others that aren't using it at all. But what I would say is that we should just look at that from the townships, should look at that, cities themselves, and the local government. And if police aren't getting enough money, they should go through the legislative process to make that case, just the way everybody else does.
So is the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in favor of abolishing civil asset forfeiture?
Yes. Our position is that we should get rid of civil forfeiture. The only way that the government should be able to forfeit, take ownership of somebody's assets and property, is after they've been convicted of a crime, and then that same judge and jury determine that their crime was connected with gaining the assets. And at that point, that's the only time they should take those products.
Jared Skorup is a policy analyst for the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Lester.